Good morning, dear colleagues, and welcome very much this morning here in Brussels on the EPP hearing, Tackling Distortive Foreign Subsidies in the Single Market. This is an initiative from the EPP members from the ECON, the IMCO, and the INTA committee, which are the responsibles for this file. And I have on my left my colleague Christian Dolleschall, who is our responsible in the IMCO committee, and he will come later in on his opinion and some comments on the file. And first of all, I would like to welcome all the speakers for our meeting today, and I thank them for their presence, even though most of you are connected via our system InterAxio. So to start off with, I would give you some practical modalities. As you know, this is a hybrid meeting, and we are, most of us are already quite familiar with it. It's so allow me to remind you that this is a hearing that is public and is accessible to be viewed outside the European Parliament, and this hearing will also be recorded and will be made available online afterwards. So for all participants and spectators, please keep all other internet activities as low as possible, so this will allow us to keep the meeting and the connections as smooth as possible. And for the interpretation regime that we have today, so you can speak and listen in English, French, and German, so feel free to use the language that is the most appropriate to you. And so first of all, I would like to start with a small short introduction. So as you all know, the proposal on the instrument on foreign subsidies has been proposed by the Commission in May 2020. And so this hearing that we are having today is, of course, very timely because I just tabled my report before the Christmas break, and my colleagues, in the opinion giving committees, ECON and IMCO, have done the same, and we are now looking forward to discussing this draft report and the opinions. And this hearing will, of course, be very useful for us as well to get the insights of the experts from the field. And this will, of course, be as well helpful for us to draft the eventual amendments, because the amendment process is now going on. So thank you very much for that. So I will give you a brief overview as well over the report that I have tabled. So, and allow me to start to say very clearly that I fully support the proposal as it has been proposed by the Commission. I think it is very important to say that the overall aim and design of the proposal can efficiently address the long-standing regulatory gap that puts European companies at a competitive disadvantage vis-à-vis certain foreign competitors that have benefited from foreign subsidies. So whereas subsidies given by EU member states to companies are subject to a very rigorous scrutiny under EU state aid rules, subsidies given by third countries often escape to such a scrutiny. And this leads, of course, to a distortion of the level playing field in the internal market, and can lead European companies being crowded out and stifling innovation and job creation within the European Union. And that's why I, of course, share fully the sense of urgency when it comes to closing this legal gap. And in addition, I would say this proposal also enhances the EU's open strategic autonomy, one big mantra that is brought into the discussion by the European Commission. And I think to level the playing field between European and foreign competitors in the internal markets is helping this open strategic autonomy strategy by the European Commission. And I also believe that it is a necessary precondition to show up as well the continued support for open and fair trade policies, which remain the main source of prosperity inside the EU. And as such, this proposal plays a crucial role in the wider endeavor to strengthen the EU's open and strategic autonomy and to undergird its outward-looking posture and address growing trade skepticism that is around there in our society. And I therefore welcome the instrument's potential to give impetus to the plurilateral and multilateral development of rules to address distortive foreign subsidies, which is a dimension of the proposal I have actively sought as well to strengthen. And, in my views, thanks as well to the inclusive process leading up to this proposal, including the publication of a white paper, an extensive public consultation, and an impact assessment, the Commission has tabled a proposal with a high degree of maturity already. So nevertheless, I still proposed some changes to the proposal by the Commission, and the overall efficacy of the instrument has been my guiding compass as well. And given that this regulation will undeniably entail administrative burden, I think we are all aware of that, for all parties involved, we need to avoid that it becomes bogged down in procedures and turns finally out into a paper tiger. That's not what we want to create. I think we are all clear about this. That. And this is also why I welcome the fact that the European Commission will be the sole enforcer of this regulation and to allow by that, by doing so, a very homogeneous application in the EU single market of the instrument. And this is also why I have decided to maintain the thresholds for the notification-based instrument. We had already discussions in the committee on that. Why have I done so? Because the Commission's calculation show that lowering the threshold, for example, for the public procurement instrument, Article 27, paragraph 2, to a value of 100 million would lead to a fivefold increase of the administrative burden for the Commission. So I think it is the additional workload associated with this increase would, of course, then as well cripple down the ex officio instrument and the capacity of the Commission to focus on the most distortive cases and the most dangerous cases, let's put it like that, that are out there, definitely. And so in my view, the current thresholds strike a delicate balance between the ambition to cover a significant number of cases and allow the Commission as well to prioritize its work and initiate the ex officio investigations where there are grounds to suspect unwarranted subsidies. And I have proposed that the thresholds should be reviewed in light of the experience that we gathered during the first years of the application of this instrument. So special attention should be paid to introducing possibly lower sector-specific thresholds in emerging industries and strategic of strategic value if the data collected by virtue of this instrument shows that foreign subsidies more often distort acquisitions in these sectors. So, as I said, I didn't touch upon the current thresholds as proposed by the Commission, but nonetheless, I strengthened as well the ex officio instrument because I want as well to facilitate that the information that stakeholders might have or member states might have over certain cases, that it is, will be more easy to bring, to fill this information in, because you stakeholders exactly know when a competitor is playing with faked cards, let's put it like that, and then that you have a direct line to the European Commission to feed in your concerns that you may have. And a major intervention by my side has also been made for known future subsidies that should be notifiable as well under this instrument. I suggested this change as well, following discussions with stakeholders to close this potential loophole, because you can imagine that at the point where the investigation is done, once the project is awarded, there could be still something coming up afterwards, or the third country just waits until the project is awarded and then comes in with its subsidies. So for the known future subsidies, I think this is an important gap that we had to fill. And then as well, in a view to minimizing and reducing the administrative burden, I have as well clarified that where a third country is found to operate a subsidy control mechanism that is equivalent to the unions, both in law and in practice, that there we could have a system that is will allow the Commission to better prioritize its work once we know that there are equivalent systems in place. And finally, a major point to focus for me as a trade coordinator is, of course, to reinforce the international dimension. So this regulation is conceived as an autonomous instrument in the absence, of course, of progress within the multilateral fora such as the WTO, where the problem of distorted subsidies for services and investment would ideally be solved, in my opinion. So as such, I see the regulation as the opportunity for the EU to double down on its commitment to advance multilateral and plurilateral solutions to distortive subsidies. And therefore, I have introduced the possibility for the European Commission to engage on behalf of the Union in third country dialogue where there is a persistent and systemic distortive subsidy scheme in place. And this is, of course, not a precondition for the instrument to work, but nonetheless, the dialogue, in my opinion, is very important to sort things out. So this is a short overview of my report, but without further ado, I would pass to our next point.
I'd like to give a very warm welcome to the French Minister for Trade and Economic Attractiveness, Franck Riester, who it was my pleasure to meet before the French presidency began, which obviously began in January. I'm very grateful, Minister, that you've taken the time to be with us today, and I also know that the file that I've just introduced is a priority for the French presidency, and we, as a European Parliament, obviously also see it as a priority, and we would like to get as far as possible under the French presidency. And obviously, I'd like, by preference, to find an agreement with you, but we'll have to see how far things are progressing in current discussions in Council, and perhaps you could introduce that in your introduction, your keynote speech. What prospects do you see for achieving a result by the end of your presidency? Without further ado, Minister, I shall give you the floor. Thank you, Christophe. Thank you for your invitation, and good morning, everybody. I'm delighted to be able to say a few words to you about this instrument, which is so important in our eyes. Now, I'd like just to express a few words in respect of President Sassoli, whom we lost a few days ago. These are difficult times, and I know you've had the opportunity to gather to think of him, and I'd also like to extend a thought to him and those close to him and all those who held him in great esteem. As you know, this text is one of the priorities under trade and commerce for the French presidency as regards subsidies paid out by third countries on a distortive basis. And that's one of the priorities for the French presidency on trade. As you know, our three priorities are opening, sustainability, and a firm stance, an assertive stance in our trade policy. And that's, moreover, very much in line with the Commission statement in February on the revision of its trade policy strategy. I think, given the importance of our trade flows for the economy at a time of recovery, this is vital, and that's part of the work that we want to do. We want to step up trade with our partners, open up new markets, open up other markets more. I've already had the opportunity to hold a conference on trade opportunities and investment opportunities between the EU and Africa on Monday with Mr. Van Dombrovskis present. As regards the continent of Africa, we think we can have more numerous trade flows and opportunities. And of course, there's a multilateral aspect. You just talked about the WTO. We want to ensure that international trade, where Europe has a larger role to continue to play, we think that that international trade should be as fair as possible and as sustainable as possible and based on rules. And we want to ensure that the WTO can return to a level of operation commensurate with our ambitions and hopes. In terms of a trade policy, we want to have one that contributes better to our sustainable development goals, whether that's the environment, biodiversity, fighting deforestation, or also social rights and human rights. And that's the reason why we, in this framework, have set out a number of priorities. For example, the carbon border adjustment mechanism. I'm also thinking about the fight against deforestation on an imported basis, the generalised system of preferences, and the sustainable development chapter there in free trade policies. And also there are Commission proposals on the duty of diligence of businesses to ensure that their supply chains are consistent with our values. And of course, in terms of international social rules and conventions. And then assertiveness. We see that trade increasingly and the economy is coming under pressure from countries that want to use trade and the economy to exert political pressure. And we see a number of partners that are increasingly following unfair practices in order to skew competition. And one may regret it. We do regret it. And we try diplomatically to act. We don't want to create tension, but we want to stop such practices. And at the same time, as I was saying, we want to use diplomacy, but also to carry our own tools to better fight those practices and be a bit less naive than we customarily are, taking into account those trade practices of our partners. And of course, there's a great deal that's already been done in Europe on improving our defence capabilities on these matters. I'm thinking about trade defence policies in 2018 to make those tools more effective, faster and better for SMEs, and also on the framework for foreign investment in 2019 to ensure better coordination between EU member states, and the adoption in 2020 of the Enforcement Directive to deal with the deadlock in the multilateral dispute settlement mechanism. We needed that modernisation. It's being carried out. And then there's ongoing discussion on reciprocity of the opening up of public procurement. The fact that Europe decides to reject in future some countries failing to open up their public procurement markets to our products, whereas our public procurement markets are open to them. We're strongly supporting that development, and we hope that under the French presidency we'll be able to achieve a trilogue agreement on that instrument. And the same applies to the instrument presented by the Commission recently, which is anti-coercion, and that is aimed specifically to fight practices that put political pressure trade or economic pressure for political ends. We can see what China's doing with Australia or China with Lithuania, for example, and we must bear in mind these extraterritorial practices of a number of countries. We must be stronger, more sovereign, and ensure we are respected in international competition. And then there is the effort that we continue to support by the Commission of proper application of free trade agreements with the establishing of a trade prosecutor, a chief trade enforcement officer role, which will ensure that the commitments made by our partners in trade agreements are respected, that their markets are properly opened, that non-tariff barriers in particular are lifted, and then when necessary, that we go into dispute proceedings, dispute settlement arrangements to defend our interests. And then we want to have a one-stop shop for business complaints. These businesses are often left in the lurch by these unfair practices by clients, suppliers in other countries. And that one-stop shop will do a better service to our businesses, who will feel less on their own. Then there's the instrument that once again we support, which is for combating the distortive effects of foreign subsidies on the internal market, both in terms of concentrations, mergers and acquisitions, but also in public procurement. And we think that's an important factor. It's about fairness, in a way, between European businesses, which are bound by the competition rules, in particular limiting state aid to some extent, where the foreign businesses today are not subject to those rules or framework. And that is a way of dealing with that unfairness, this instrument. And under the French presidency, we want to ensure in discussions that we bring a listening ear to the different member states. I know, Christophe, your comments and ideas have been heard attentively on this, because if there's a common will to be able to engage with this topic, we still need to ensure that the instrument is adjusted so that it best deals with the problems experienced. It should be user-friendly as it can be, but when we come to use it, it must be effective so that it's genuinely a deterrent against a number of actors in different countries. Therefore, we're persuaded that this instrument, which will allow the Commission to react to public procurement situations or concentration transactions, as I've discussed, should be linked either to a complaint by a business or a country, or should act directly because of a suspicion that a subsidy is unfair. It will then be able to look very clearly at the situation and bring out any distortive effects and use a broad range of remedies. There should be transparency and a publication of the subsidy and of the ruling on the merger or acquisition, or a challenging of the public procurement deal. And it might even lead as far as repaying any subsidy received. So that's one way of dealing with that significant problem. And this is all in a mindset of balance. I'm a business leader. I know that business leaders should not constantly be under excessive administrative burdens, but they should, on the contrary, receive support from the public authorities to deal with competition, which can be unfair at times. We also want that not to be a break on investment. We want dialogue to be the priority over sanctions, of course. And we would also like these issues to be properly limited to concentrations or public procurement, so that it doesn't filter through into too much economic activity. The presidency, therefore, will do its utmost to foster discussion and consensus with, as you reminded us, dear Christophe, long-term perspectives too. we need autonomous tools. We need to be able to keep working in parallel on multilateral work, in particular in the WTO, to ensure that we have the proper tools at that level too to fight distortive subsidies. That's the work that we do, for example, with the US and Japan on the multilateral level, and that's what we want to do also in the International Technology and Trade Council with the United States, and we hope for a renewal in transatlantic relations. We're persuaded to take the topic of steel, which is the most problematic today in terms of overcapacity and unfair competition, that we can do something there. So I'm convinced that this instrument will allow us to defend our interests and encourage third countries to negotiate multilaterally. And I'm confident in our ability to strike a compromise that is the most effective one for our businesses.
Efficace.
And respond as best we can, as most effectively we can, to competition, which is sometimes unfair from our partners. And I hope Parliament's mandate will be adopted in the spring. I think that's your objective, around April time. I do hope that we'll be able to progress at a good pace in Council in that direction. Thank you, Christophe. That's what I had to say to you.
Cher Franck, cher...
Thank you, Frank. Thank you for those comments. I see some agreement, some points of agreement throughout the file, which leaves me optimistic that we can make great strides on this particular file over the coming weeks. Let me recap on the deadlines. The vote is scheduled at committee level in April, that is the International Trade Committee vote. Econ and IMCO will have their votes 3 weeks earlier. So we're scheduled for the end of April and heading to plenary by the end of May, with a hope to complete discussions under the French presidency if we have consensus. That is our feeling, our wish. I hope that the Council shares that desire. I think we can move swiftly. Absolutely, Christophe. Just to let you know that at Council we'll be discussing this through the competition network rather than the trade network. And of course, we in trade will be keeping an eye on this, but the competition people will be in charge of discussions. Thank you for specifying that. The makeup of the different bodies in Council do not always overlap with what you find here in the European Parliament, but we have good teams in place on both sides so we can move forward swiftly on this file. Thank you for clearing that up. Now, my thanks to the Minister for sharing some of his valuable time with us. I know you're very busy, so thank you for your statement today. We, of course,
English, so we can now move on to our main panel as well for today, after the keynote speech by the French Minister, Franck Riester. We will move to our panel, so I just would like to remind the panelists that each of you has about 7 minutes to do your presentation. We have four speakers today, so the first one will be for the European Commission. We have Christophe Chauser from DG Competition, which is the lead DG on the IFS file. Then the second intervention today will be for the European Dredging Association, and there we have the Secretary General Paris Sansaglu, who will speak on behalf of the European Dredging Association. Then we have for Herrenknecht Tunnelvortriebssysteme the Professor Martin Herrenknecht, who is the Unternehmensgründer, the founder of the company, and is as well chairing the board of the company. And this is indeed a sector where we face a lot of competition from third countries, and he will go into the details there. And then for the European Construction Industry Federation, we have the policy officer on economic and legal affairs, Alonso Brito. And thank you very much for your availability to this morning. And without further ado, I will pass the floor to Christoph Schoser from the DG Competition. Mr. Schoser, you have the floor.
Mr. Schoser, can you unmute yourself? Thank you.
Yes, good morning. Thank you very much for the opportunity here to participate and to engage further in a dialogue also with stakeholders and explain the Commission proposal for the regulation in a bit more detail. If possible, I send five slides to summarize the proposal. Thank you very much. I can now see it and we can immediately move to the first slide. The idea is to give a bit of a context and the main lines of the proposal, but also already react a bit to what Mr. Hansen has published in the report just before Christmas. And of course, it will take more time to analyze and discuss. But just to put the proposal in a picture, and both Minister Riester and Mr. Hansen have already given some context. Of course, the EU is heavily connected to the world economy, both in terms of trade and investment. In both areas, the EU can be seen as, and according to the figures that we've seen, as the major trading bloc. Well, that has two consequences. The first is that the economic policy of other countries influences also through the trade and investment flows the EU economy. In a positive way, most of the times we would like to think, but of course sometimes in a distortive way. But generally, as trade and investment, I think is a very positive element for the EU economy. The proposal also tries to target as much as possible the potential problems with foreign subsidies and not block investment and trade flows in any way more than necessary, namely related to these distortions. If we go to the next slide, please. As was mentioned before, the very reason to propose such an instrument is that the subsidies within the EU are controlled and have been controlled for many decades according to the EU state aid rules, but nothing is done in respect to subsidies granted by non-EU governments which have an effect on the EU. As Mr. Hansen mentioned, there was a long consultation process and assessment process before to try to find out where is the problem. And just to mention, three areas. There's been a particular attention in the area of acquisitions, that companies that received foreign subsidies and were in many ways supported by non-EU governments found it easy to acquire European companies, and therefore could had an advantage vis-a-vis other bidders in that process. The same is true for some public procurement contracts, where there is at least a suspicion that kind of foreign subsidies help the bidders to win the award in a certain procedure. And there is a collection of other indications in other areas where foreign subsidies in the operation of a company help the respective company to gain business and crowd out non-subsidized companies. If we move to the next slide, please. So the whole proposal needs to be seen in the broader context of what already exists. Of course, there are already many pieces of legislation that try to create a level playing field in the EU internal market. You have, on the one hand, competition law in the EU, but you also have trade law. So here again, the proposal really tries to target the gap. Just to give you one example, there is already a subsidy control for foreign subsidies for for goods, now for products, physical products that are imported into the EU. There are well-established rules under the World Trade Organization for this. And this shouldn't be and cannot be duplicated. So with this proposal here focuses indeed more on services, on investments, which are not covered by these rules. And it's always important that we play by the international rules, if you like, and that this proposal doesn't undermine any international rules. As Mr. Hansen said in the beginning, it's very important for us to keep the WTO functioning and also engage in dialogue with the third countries where there's a problem. It is a defensive instrument, but the Commission also supports the idea that ideally, the international rules are found to solve the problem, and this is more of a defensive instrument, but which does seem very necessary at the moment, because at international level, there is this gap for foreign subsidies in some areas, and this is not being tackled actively in any international fora. If we move to the next slide, please. So just to mention here on this slide, the main principles, as I said before, the objective is to maintain trade investment flows and really focus only on instances where foreign subsidies are distortive, and also to, well, minimize the administrative burden. The feedback from the market, from stakeholders, but also from public authorities has been please avoid adding a lot of red tape. The thresholds have also been mentioned by Mr. Hansen. We've really tried to simulate what is a feasible way to target, on the one hand, the most distortive cases of foreign subsidies, but on the other hand, not overburden companies or the administration with red tape and bureaucratic overhead. And that's where the proposed thresholds were calculated. And we're happy to see also that Mr. Hansen is largely agrees with the calculations and reflections that were done. Then, as I mentioned, international obligations is a very important area, and a lot of legal thinking has gone into carving out the precise legal gap there, and not to undermine existing or violate existing obligations of the European Union under the WTO or other multilateral fora. We move to the next slide, please, and this is already the last one. So this slide just, and I will not go into much detail, but presents the main building blocks of the proposal for a regulation to react, for example, to now a proposal, in Mr. Hansen, in your report, is that also include the position in a strong position of a company in a third country. Well, I think that was an idea that actually was also there at the previous stage in the white paper, and there may be some scope, but the benchmark, we think, is always how to control state aid in the EU, and going further than what is considered a subsidy in the EU may be problematic under international rules, but I think that you've developed ideas how this can be framed and made part of this proposal. Then the second element is on the procedures, and that part there is a notification procedure, and I think I would like to mention there's a kind of innovation in terms of regulation, because the proposal also includes so-called ad hoc notifications. So that gives the opportunity then to the enforcing authority, which would be the Commission, to really target specific acquisitions that are problematic, rather than have a notification requirement on everyone. But I think I'll stop here, as my time is over, and I'm happy to engage also in question and answers later during this panel. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schoser, and of course we are looking forward to the Q&A session, which is the most interactive part of the meeting today, and therefore sure there will be questions coming up. So thank you very much for your opening statement, and I, without further ado, I would pass the floor to Paris Sansoglu for the European Dredging Association for 7 minutes. You have the floor, Paris Sansoglu.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you. Good morning, and I would like to really thank you for the invitation. The European Dredging Association is really honored. We represent world leaders in a niche market, so not many people know about it, but let's say the dredgers are, let's say, facilitating maritime activities from, let's say, waterborne transport, inland and maritime, or offshore energy. So they are the people cleaning the ports and installing, let's say, the wind farms offshore. This being said, we are faced with more and more competitive distorting practices around the world. And now we've discovered that in the EU as well, we have the same issues. The speaker speaking before me made a clear list that there are clear gaps. The gaps are because these distortive practices are more and more complex. And moreover, there's new types of actors appearing, and we name them, at least we found that name, it's not our invention, not economically motivated actors. These people don't apply economic principles or market economy, but they, let's say, are motivated by geopolitical or geostrategic decisions. Like my predecessor said, state aid only applies to EU companies, not to non-EU, and therefore there is a reverse discrimination. And we are very happy that this has been identified and that measures are being taken. Why? Because these companies, these NEMAs, are using these subsidies, as mentioned, to acquire strategic companies or to, let's say, establish a presence, which is fair. But the establishment of the presence in a particular market, once it's pursued, leads to oligopoly or even monopoly by eliminating progressively competition that is playing by the rules. So, what are we talking about? We are talking about a very high complexity that needs an equally refined approach. We are suggesting a trade strategic toolbox approach. And this is exactly what the institutions are doing with the IPI. And we are certainly hoping that it will be adopted under the French presidency. One of the gaps, at least, will be filled. We mentioned reciprocity, and this is what is necessary, and respect. I take the words from the Minister Riester. Then foreign subsidies are a huge gap. As I mentioned, there's a reverse discrimination. State aid, European state aids are defined in a certain way, and foreign subsidies are defined in another way. The design of the legislation for state aid is targeting member states, foreign subsidies targeting, let's say, companies, goods and services. These approaches are complementary and necessary instruments. And what I would like to convey as a message is recently Belgium has tabled a request to the Commission to consider a consultation over trade defense instruments for construction services. And the predecessors have mentioned there is nothing in terms of trade defense instruments outside the goods. So services are not covered. And this is a first attempt to fill this gap. We are fully supportive of this Belgian consultation. And with regards, let's say, to the foreign subsidies, it is compatible as well. So the foreign subsidies are one aspect of the coin. There are, under the trade defense instruments, for instance, aspects of anti-dumping added to the anti-subsidies. And the element of trigger is very important, like mentioned by the Minister Riester, that it can be initiated by companies that make a complaint. So at this stage, voila, that I will not further take your time. I would like to stop here and leave the floor to you, Mr. Hansen. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sansoglu. And indeed, this complaint mechanism, I have included it as well in my draft report. And I think colleagues from the other committees see this quite favorable. I think so this has good chances to go ahead. And thank you very much for your views of the European Dredging Association. And our next speaker is from Germany. It's Professor Martin Herrenknecht from Herrenknecht Tunnelvortriebssysteme, which is, so he will present briefly as well his activities and as well the problems that in his sector they encounter when it comes to companies from third countries that might have as well undue support or at least unfair compared to our European companies controlled by state, by the very strict state aid rules. So with, I will pass you the floor, Dr. Martin, Professor Martin Herrenknecht. You have the floor for 7 minutes to give us a little bit an overview about your activities and the problems you encounter.
Okay. Chair Minister Riester.
Minister Riester, Mr. Hansen, I would like to begin by thanking you for this invitation. I would like to briefly outline our difficulties, the problems we face with third countries, and I would like to show some slides. Herrenknecht is an international leader in mechanized tunneling. We deal with staff of some 5,000 and we work extensively in France. Next slide, please. Here you can see our premises near France. We have some 3,000 people employed in Germany, 2,000 being trained, 200 in France. Moving on to the next slide. These are major projects that we have carried out. Next slide, please. You see that we have some 5,000 employees worldwide, 3,000 in Germany, 200 trainees. Now moving on to our major projects. Next slide, the Gotthard Base Tunnel. Next slide, please. Here you can see the Gotthard Base Tunnel. We worked from companies from China, two from the north, two from the south. Brenner Tunnel here, next slide. Here you can see the machines that we use. Moving on to the next slide. Next slide, please. Here you can see the Greater Paris area. We worked well with a French company, the French construction companies really do comply precisely with the rules here, let me say that. Next slide. Here you can see the machinery we're developing. 5 meter diameter here. We've developed that with a Hong Kong company for a road tunnel. Next slide. Now I'd like to talk about the current competitive situation and move on to the next slide, please. So we had 5 rivals, Canada, Germany, France, America. All of these companies were bought up by China. We're the only one left in the rest of the world. Next slide. Let me outline the state of play in China, CSCEC, CREC, CRCC, CCCC, and Herrenknecht. In 1986, we contacted businesses in China. We set up a subsidiary there, 700 employees. So we have a number of employees at our Chinese firm. Let me talk about the difficulties we face. Next slide. On TBM, well, if we export machinery to China, we have to pay 10% levy. If the Chinese import machinery into Europe, no import levies. So we're talking about a 10% competitive disadvantage. Next slide, please. What's happening now? Chinese firms on the global market, you have them in Singapore, United Arab Emirates, Turkey, Italy, Germany. They can offer dumping prices to compete against us. I am in favor of competition. I have nothing against competition, but not when you're dealing with dumping prices. Next slide, please. Here you can see the Swina River Poland project. Our lowest price was 17 million. The Chinese sold the machinery at 12.5 million. Italy, we offered 20 million for a project. The Chinese, 12 million. Italy in the south, Lonato, 16 million was our bid. And then the Chinese, 13.1 million. Copenhagen, Denmark, there it was rather sensible. Our most recent bid there at the end, 9.5 million for Germany. The Chinese bid, 6.4 million. So you can see here dumping prices to compete on the market. I personally, next slide, please. I believe that when it comes to projects, we need to protect jobs and apprenticeships. With the Brenner Tunnel, well, we're moving on to the next phase. It's going to get tougher now. For the last four machines, the Chinese want to get involved. We have the Euroalpin Lyon-Turin tunnel, a major project, some 350 million. The Chinese are looking to get involved here too. I personally believe that we must safeguard jobs and ensure fair competition. Competition is something I welcome, including competing against Chinese companies, but we can't have dumping. Next slide, please. Brenner Tunnel. We currently have four machines being deployed. And in Italy, we have twice 170 kilometres, longest railway tunnel in Europe. I believe that with EU support, we need to ensure that we secure fair competition here too. Next slide, please. Upcoming projects. EU-funded projects, the Chinese have submitted bids. I believe that this is not real competition. It is true dumping. We need to ensure that we protect jobs in Europe. And above all, protect training apprenticeships. I mean, the Chinese strategic goal is clear. If they were to buy us up, they dominate the global market. So we need to pull together in Europe and prevent that happening. Next slide, please. we need to maintain standards. Time is short, however, but so I won't go into the details. We need a balance. In China, we have some 700 people employed. We work according to ILO principles. I'd just like to reiterate that I'm not in favour of dumping prices being used to decimate markets. Our company will be financially weakened if we have to deal with dumping prices. I would like to thank you, the EU and the French presidency, for showing how well they are familiar with the situation. We know that there are plenty of French companies active in China, and I really want to express my praise for French companies. They're extremely fair in the way they compete against us. Minister Riester, thank you very much for all the work you'll be doing over the next 6 months. Mr. Hansen, thank you also. I'd be happy to field any questions and engage in discussions. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to outline our situation. As you can see, I started the company from scratch. We employ 5,000, some 200 apprentices. I set great store by protecting European industry on the Lyon-Turin project and the Brenner Tunnel project. And indeed, when it comes to upcoming projects in Italy, we're talking about machinery that will be put up for tender, billions of euros worth of contracts. And I feel that we need fair competition. We shouldn't have to deal with dumping prices. So thank you very much. I'd be happy to take any questions you might have.
Sehr herzlichen Dank, Herr Herrenknecht. Und das war natürlich für uns sehr, sehr.
Thank you very much. That was a very clear illustration of what happened in your field, how competition was tackled, how competitors were bought up by Chinese companies. And you're left now as the last of the Mohicans. The Dredging Association didn't mention an example that I'm familiar with. The dredging of the Elbe, three European companies submitted bids. They were around the 50 billion Chinese swept in and offered a bid of 30 billion. Quite clearly, there is a problem here. And these are cases that we need to keep an eye on. They're below the threshold as currently defined, but the ex officio tool would have to be used in such cases. I'm sure there'll be some questions for you, Mr. Herrenknecht, and the Commission. But before we move on to Q&A, we have one further online address. And I'd like to give the floor to the European Construction Federation. Alfonso Brito now has the floor for 7 minutes. Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Brito, you can press on the speak button once, please.
Now you can hear me.
Yes.
Yes, thank you. I will begin by briefly introducing FIEC. Through our 33 national member federations, 28 in EU member states, we represent construction companies of all sizes in Europe. I would also like to thank the EPP for the invitation to take part in this hearing and also for the good cooperation the EPP has maintained with FIEC recently. In particular, our collaboration on the IPI file has been very fruitful. We coincide with other participants that there is a strong need to ensure a level playing field in the internal market and also openness, of course. As such, FIAC welcomes the initiatives taken by the Commission in this respect, the IPI, and in this case, the proposal for a regulation on distortive foreign subsidies. Nevertheless, I would add that we also coincide with the suggestion made by Paris Sansoglu that there can be improvements made to the EU's toolbox to tackle unfair competition, namely TDI for construction services. Before going into FIAC's positions on the foreign subsidies proposal, I will give some brief insights into the current situation in our sector. As we have already, discussed together on previous occasions, in recent years, the presence of state-owned third-country companies in the European construction market has increased. And this is not only the case in Central and Eastern European countries, but also in countries such as Sweden or Germany. We have observed that these companies are bidding for projects of all sizes, so not just larger infrastructure projects, and that they routinely offer substantially lower prices than their European competitors. We've illustrated this with an interactive map, which I can share with those who have not seen it yet. I won't list all these past projects, but I would like to point out an ongoing project which illustrates the problems subsidies pose in our sector in a very good way. The case involves a bid from a Chinese state-owned enterprise for the construction of an expressway in eastern Poland. Tenders for this project were submitted in November 2021, and the Chinese bidder offered prices that are substantially lower than its European competitors. And the bidder in question even went as far as advertising this on publicly on its social media accounts. I will just give a very brief description of the figures involved. So if we were to take the offer made by the Chinese bidder and then take the average of all other offers, we would observe a price discrepancy of more than 20%. A similar discrepancy is observed when comparing the Chinese bidder's offer to the client's cost estimate. And of course, such discrepancies would not have been possible without a foreign subsidy. And while the contract for this project has not yet been awarded, in many cases such as this one, price is often the predominant factor when awarding a contract. Hence, this case really highlights the need for regulatory intervention to guarantee that companies operating in the EU are all playing by the same rules. In view of this situation, we consider the Commission's proposal as a major step towards ensuring a level playing field. Nevertheless, there are several improvements that could be made to the Commission's proposal. I will just give a few comments on a couple of suggestions for amendments FIAC has put forward, and we have done this together with the European International Contractors. First, we propose that state-owned undertakings from non-market economies should be subject to a rebuttable presumption of the reception of foreign subsidies. This will make the instrument more efficient and reduce the administrative burden on the Commission. We also consider that redressive measures should include the exclusion from future procurement procedures to reduce market presence. We don't consider the redressive measures currently proposed, such as the repayment of foreign subsidies, to effectively remedy the distortive effects that they have in the public procurement market. We also consider that the investigative tools in the proposal should be strengthened. With respect to the ex officio tool, the proposal only provides that the Commission may initiate a review based on evidence it has. This tool can be strengthened by providing interested third parties with the possibility to initiate a review concerning market investigations. Under the current proposal, they would only lead to a report. To make the instrument more effective, they should also lead to measures that ensure fair competition, namely the adoption of sector-specific redressive measures. So I will stop here. Once again, thank you for the opportunity to participate in this hearing, and I look forward to any questions you might have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brito, on behalf of the European Construction Industry Federation, and for giving your introductory statements. And we would now move to the Q&A session. There was already Dida Clooney on the screen that asked for the floor. She has still raised the hand, but I have here in the room first Andreas Schwab, who also asked for the floor. So, Andreas, I will give you the first question, and then we move to the online participation by Dida Clooney.
Well, for me, thank you so much, Christoph. For me, no problem to give the first floor to the colleague that is there from Ireland. No problem for me.
Then we make ladies first, and Dider, you have the floor first, and then afterwards we take Andreas Schwab.
Okay, Christoph, thank you, and thank you very much to for organizing this hearing, and thanks to the participants. I think it's really important, and for me particularly, the example that the representative from the construction industry gave of a particular contract went for tender, and that there's a 20% difference. I mean, that's a real what would you say, outlining the real difficulties that are there. And of course, there must be subsidies involved, and we must look at trying to address this. I just like to ask those representatives that are from industry whether they think that the thresholds for the notification based interest, whether they think that they are adequate, and from their own perspectives, their own different industries. So thank you for that, and thanks for the information this morning.
Thank you very much, Deirdre, and we will collect some questions first, and then I give the floor now to Andreas Schwab, who is here in the room.
Thank you so much, Christoph, and thank you so much, Christian, for that very timely hearing on foreign subsidies. And I think the speakers that we have been hearing this morning have been proving, Christoph, that there is a problem with international markets, international procurement markets, and especially the element of subsidies. And as I know Mr. Herrenknecht personally, I would like to thank him first, and I would like to ask him again to outline a bit further how he believes that we can trace the subsidies that companies from outside the European Union are getting, and then enter with these subsidies the European market, because he's a specialist in a very peculiar sector where there are only a few players. But we have to do that legislation under your leadership, Christoph and Christian, in a way that we achieve that we can also catch elements where there are more companies in a given market, for example, construction. And therefore, I think it's of utmost importance to find tools to understand the subsidy element in these procurement procedures, to make sure that we catch those that are really unfairly privileged and not those that are just offering the best price and the best service, because that was always important for us, not only in public procurement, but also in European policies, that the competition is based on the merits. And therefore, I would like to thank Mr. Herrenknecht really a lot for his excellent contribution.
Thank you very much, Andreas. And then I will pass the floor to Christian Dolleschall for questions to our panelists.
Yeah, first of all, thank you very much for all the explications and the presentations. I have one question to Mr. Schoser. I think it was also very interesting to see that there are more than 100,000 foreign companies in the EU, and the EU28 was a destination for a third of the world's investment stocks. My question is, therefore, how do you think the Balancing Act can be achieved between stricter rules for third country subsidies on the one hand, without discouraging or scaring off foreign investors from investing in Europe on the other. Just last week, I spoke with a large Canadian pension fund that is afraid of not being able to invest in Europe in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Christian. And then maybe I will add a question already from my side here as well, because Professor Herrenknecht was as well talking about the 10% that he as a European company faces when he enters the Chinese market as well. And of course, this is something that will be difficult to catch under this instrument, but nonetheless, eventually this could qualify as a financial contribution in some way, because the companies that are, let's say, chronically profiting for not having such a levy will have a structural advantage there. And this question goes then directly as well to Christoph Schoser. Do you think that this could be caught by the financial contributions that we want to target here? I know that will be very difficult because you will have to roll it out over the overall activity of the concerned company in and outside the market where it has this advantage. Can we catch it with the instrument? And then maybe a second question directly as well to Professor Martin Herrenknecht. Under the German presidency, we concluded the China Agreement on Investment. Do you think this would have resolved the main problems that you face when you go to a third market? So these are the questions from my side, but I think we start, I would give the floor first directly to Christoph Schoser, because several questions, including the one on the thresholds by Deirdre Clooney, have been addressed directly to you, and the question of Christian Dolleschall as well. So, Mr. Schoser, you have the floor.
Yes, thank you very much. Yeah, let me immediately come to these questions. How do we maybe first the one on the thresholds? We've calculated the thresholds so that you can compare it to how many merger notifications you have in Europe every year under European rules, and it's about 400 transactions, acquisitions that are notified at European level under the merger regulation, and that's the one idea, just to simplify, would have been to say why we don't look for every of these transactions into foreign subsidies. But you need to know that really requires a lot of work on the side of the companies to prepare these notifications, as well as on the side then of the Commission to analyze them. So the idea was really to focus really on where there is an indication of a foreign financial contribution, which more often than not may be also companies that have more of their business or their headquarters outside Europe, but we don't know at this stage. So the calibration with the threshold was really done to come to a figure of, we said, between potentially 30 or 40 notifications per year. And how can we be even more targeted? Mr. Dolleschall, you may have seen there is what is called a delegated act. So the idea that with more experience, we can identify innocent investors, no financial investors, which really are just investing because they see a good business opportunity in Europe. And maybe they don't want to acquire control. That, you know, then obviously there shouldn't be any problem for them to invest in the EU. And maybe it's with some case experience possible to identify these groups of investors, be it certain types of pension funds or certain types of investors. And anyway, there is a condition to fall under the regulation is that you actually acquire control, or at least join control together with others, before you have to notify under this proposed regulation. So there are some tools also with the ad hoc notifications that I mentioned before to be able to really hopefully target the most relevant subsidized acquisitions. Then on the issue of the financial contribution, I think we can learn really a lot on how state aid is assessed in the EU, and the state aid notion is very broad. It's not only that money is given, like a bag of money is given to a company. State aid can have a form of a zero interest loan, of a state guarantee, of some use of some public infrastructure for free. So there, all this can be qualified as state aid, and I think that can then really be used also in the context of assessing foreign subsidies. The challenge, and that's Christoph Hansen, I understand your question, is to see within groups also, if the money is granted outside, if it goes, is then used inside, it will not be easy to trace the flow of the money or the benefit of a state support from outside the EU to inside the EU. But there again, we can learn, I think, a lot from how trade policy applies it, and where there is some experience and practice with analyzing company accounts. Many of them are actually even quoted at the stock exchange, though they have transparency obligations. And we will have the tools, or propose the tools, how to gather this information. And especially if a company is obliged to notify a transaction, it can only conclude this transaction if there's a positive decision on this transaction. So that gives, of course, a leverage vis-a-vis the companies to provide for the relevant information, because if they don't, there would be no clearance. Voila, I think I hope that replies to those questions.
Thank you, Mr. Schosach. And there were as well two direct questions to you, Professor Herrenknecht. The first one from colleague Schwab, to elaborate a little bit more on the situation and and the problems that you face. And the second one by me, if the CAI, the China Agreement on Investment, would have resolved the majority of the problems that your specific sector faces. Professor Herrenknecht, you have the floor.
Okay, besten Dank.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. To talk about specifics, Italy. The Italian construction company may order machinery from China at what I would politely refer to as dumping prices. If that is the case, well, in the EU, we need to consider that if machinery is delivered to Italy, we need to try to ensure that more jobs are kept in Italy, that some of the production takes place in Italy, same in France. If machinery is delivered, will we have some 300 people employed in France? We manufacture some of the equipment or finalise manufacturing in France too. So that has to be borne in mind. The ILO standards must also be borne in mind. They need to be factored into the equation here. Ensure that we respect standards. In France, if the Chinese deliver machinery, well, it would be in line with European standards. But there's more that needs to be done. We need to look at a broader view here, ensure fair competition, no dumping prices. We can vet the prices. We have a manufacturing facility in China, 700 employed there. We know exactly what it costs to produce the machinery, so we can check this, and we need to look at long-term safeguarding of jobs, ensure that we don't lose the technical know-how. The strategy is very clear. The Chinese have a great strategy here. We need a similar strategic approach in Europe. We need long term to maintain skills here and maintain jobs in Europe. ensure that the prestigious projects such as the Lyon-Turin tunnel project, you know, projects that receive EU funding in Italy, we need to ensure that in such cases, we look at staffing, jobs, factor in all issues. That would be my main concern. Your initiative, Mr. Hansen, and Minister Riester, I think your initiatives and your approach, that's the right way forward, and we need to continue down this path. Thank you.
Danke, Herr Herrenknecht.
Thank you.
Question to the Judging Association and to the Construction Industry Federation, but nonetheless, I would have a question to you, because firstly, on the thresholds that are currently proposed, combined with a strengthened ex officio instrument, as I have highlighted in the beginning, do you think we will be able to catch the most critical competitors, and if they get undue state aids, do you think we can catch them with this combination of instrument? And when we are talking about eventually lowering thresholds in certain specific sectors, what sectors do you think of? And I think that would be very important to know from you. And then maybe as well a question to the Dredging Association, because some people in the Parliament might not be familiar with which kind of projects you are competing with. I named one of them on the Elbe dredging, but maybe you have some specific examples to give our auditors as well, where you faced with the big projects prices from a third country that was just not possible under common under a fair competition. So I would be very much interested to hear examples there concretely from you. And I give the floor first to Alfonso Brito on my first question, and then I will give the floor to Paris Sansoglu. Alfonso Brito, you have the floor.
Yes, so concerning the question on the notification-based tools, the threshold specifically, our initial position was that we suggested lowering the threshold to 50 million. This was what we had proposed, and this was based on an observation of what was happening in the market. We saw that many state-owned enterprises were bidding for contracts within this range. And when we proposed this threshold, we had we considered it a safety net in case the Commission would not act through the ex officio tool. Now, we were then previously asked in subsequent discussions with the EPP whether we would agree, or whether we would consider that raising the threshold we have proposed would have been acceptable. And we said we gave a halfway figure of 100 million, but this would be based on strengthening the provisions for the ex officio review tool, and as well as market investigations. We really feel that, in particular, the ex officio review tool, that it should be guaranteed that where the Commission has sufficient evidence that it would act. So, and I think this also answers the question that Mr. Hansen also posed. And just going briefly and considering the figures that we have proposed, we do acknowledge that the administrative burden that there would be on the Commission of lowering the thresholds. However, we would ask to consider several of the measures we have proposed that we feel that would alleviate this burden, some of which I already outlined in the introductory statement that I've made. But another suggestion would be, for example, to require declarations from bidders whenever abnormally low tenders are suspected. So we do agree that strengthening the other tools, particularly ex officio, would work in combination with the thresholds that are currently proposed, but we do feel that if they could, the thresholds can still be lowered, that would be positive.
Thank you very much, Mr. Brito, and I give the floor to Paris Sansoglu for the same question, basically, and additionally as well, some more concrete examples where you, your members, member companies face in big projects unfair competition.
Yeah. Hansen, for the questions. On the thresholds, I think, Mrs. Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. Now you are gone again.
I have to be read. Okay, thanks. So concerning the thresholds, Mrs. Deidre Clune asked also, let's say, the sectors, what is their opinion? I think 50 million is a good start. The main question with thresholds is very simple. What is the level of damage we are considering acceptable? So the higher we go, the more, let's say, project we leave open for competition, and let's say the less we try to take under the scrutiny of the instrument. For us, let's say 50 million is a good point, because 250 million is certainly not something that happens every year in Europe. Maybe once a year, maybe once every second year, depending a little bit on the situation. Regarding the ELBE, I think it's important to also point that the strategy of the state-owned companies, here, let's say we are talking about Chinese state-owned companies, was first to establish their metrics. So they competed on a variety of projects, including the Weser and the Ems River. The Ems was after the Elbe, but the Weser River was for me clearly a test to see whether their pricing was correct. And then they went for the kill on the Elbe, and the kill was about 30% difference or 32% difference with the second best offer. So we are talking about significant differences, and without foreign subsidies, we would not be able to understand how this is tenable. The intention, as I said, is to establish a presence and progressively develop into an oligopoly. And I think the sector of Mr. Herrenknecht is clearly an oligopoly. There's practically a duopoly, because the Chinese are state-owned companies. So overall, the decisions are made let's say, concentrated way in Beijing, and he has to compete with all of them on the markets. And this is why I mentioned in the chat that I fully support what he said about the European funds funded project. European funded project should support the European values, and that means environmental sustainability, working conditions, and he emphasized the social aspect. So what is the job creation locally? And this is a very important element of public procurement as well. You are investing a lot of money locally. You want also an impact locally. If it's all done by one type of, let's say, competitor, non-EU, the money is leaving. So I take another example from the dredging. So there was another project recently in Poland, and it was, let's say, a very small project, but the Chinese had material equipment in the area, and they could actually bid, and they won that project. So they, at the moment, we can see that they are targeting any size of project, and progressively, once they have established a presence, the strategy is to eliminate competition. And how do they do it? Well, without unfair competition, I don't think they would be able to sustain their practices. And therefore, we welcome again the foreign subsidies. However, somebody mentioned previously the practices of EU trade. If we look at trade defense instruments, about 90% of the cases that have been put under the goods are for anti-dumping and 10% for subsidies. The reason is that subsidies are very difficult to demonstrate, while dumping is. Mr. Ehrenknecht systematically referred to dumping, and I'm not surprised. It's very difficult to say, they are receiving money from the state, and this is causing this type of damage, and so on. While if you demonstrate that clearly there is an issue with their pricing, because their cost is so much, and because, let's say, the amount of work was so much, we do not understand how this is, let's say, feasible. So this is where I will leave it, but I hope I have answered your question, Mr. Hansen.
Yes, thank you very much. And indeed, you have. And I think if I was the European Commission and I hear the concrete examples from, especially from the dredging and from the tunnel sectors, that those are indeed sectors because of the particular market situation that are particularly at risk. So for me personally, I think they would qualify to be looked more in detail at, because of course we would. There are the jobs that are at stake, but as well all the know-how that we have created and that we might be losing if we are not able to give a fair competition, at least on the European market and in the internal market, for the major projects that have been outlined as well by Professor Ehrenknecht. But I have still one question here from Christian Dolleschal. Christian, you have the floor.
Ja, vielen herzlichen Dank. Ich möchte mich an der Stelle auch nochmal ganz besonders.
Thank you very much indeed. And at this point, I'd like to thank Mr. Dr. Ehrenknecht very much indeed for his statement. In discussions with the Commission and other interest representatives, we've seen that there's very little in the way of data on third country subsidies, and it makes it difficult for us to establish to what extent the thresholds established by the Commission are practical. I would like to ask if you've got any insight as regards support by third country subsidies amongst your Chinese competitors, and also you talked about the Silk Road and the Commission policy and being the last Mohican. What exactly specifically is being done on the European side here? And then lastly, it's just been mentioned by Mr. Hansen, we're at the beginning of the negotiations. I presented my proposal just before the Christmas break. The discussion arose about whether distortive subsidies from third countries were sometimes of a non-financial nature, such as a competitive edge through more lax environmental rules in the home country, or some other support through the parent company. Thank you. Thank you, Christian, says Mr. Hansen. I think we could pass those questions on to Mr. Schusser, who's asked for the floor anyway. So I'm going to give Mr. Schusser the floor and Dr. Ehrenknecht.
Indeed. Well, first of all, indeed, very much. Thank you also to the stakeholders and Mr. Ehrenknecht and the two other representatives for the concrete examples. I fully agree that the more we know about where the problem is, the better it will be able not to shape the legislation and, of course, also later the implementation. But I would like to make a bit of advertising for the one part of the regulation that is sometimes underestimated, which are the ex officio procedures, because with this tool, any suspicion and indication of a foreign subsidy can be investigated. So, and that is also true for public procurement procedures, for smaller ones, which are by their nature, the information about a public procurement procedure is public when it's published in official journals. And then if there is indeed a sector which has a history of foreign subsidies or where there's an indication that there are many subsidized companies acting with this ex officio tool, the Commission can become active even without a notification. So this ex officio helps then to target more specifically the procedures, the acquisitions, smaller acquisitions, and the sectors where there may be a systematic problem. And there are quite strong tools in this ex officio tool then to get this information. And I agree it will be difficult, as here some speakers have said, it will be difficult to get this information on subsidies. But there are there's even the possibility to go into companies to have inspections in companies in the EU and potentially even outside, as is happening in anti-dumping cases, to gather the relevant information. So I think that is a bit an underestimated part of the legislation, which gives a lot of flexibility to focus on where foreign subsidies may be really distortive. One more thing on state-owned enterprises. The proposal, as you know, does not specifically single out state-owned enterprises. For two reasons. The first is there may be a legal problem because in the EU we generally treat state-owned enterprises and private companies the same. So it would be difficult to say for third countries we specifically look into state-owned enterprises. But for me also a more practical reason is, you know, formally private companies may still be very much subsidized or very much influenced by the state. So why spend time to say, well, one company is state-owned or not? If there's a suspicion of a subsidy, this is the relevant element. It may happen more often for state-owned companies, but it may also happen for private companies. So why we don't think we gain anything by focusing on state-owned companies, because we can do it anyway, to focus if need be, on this link to the state. And final comment about what Mr. Dolezal said, what about kind of other distortions not coming from financial contributions, but environmental standards, labor standards? That may be a very valid point, and I think this has been investigated in other areas. And there are other tools like bilateral agreements, for example, or rules under the World Labour Organization, International Labour Organization, to tackle this. There is a risk of overburdening this tool if including really other elements than subsidies or financial contributions. And there's also a legal risk of going beyond what we do ourselves in the EU under the EU state aid rules. Thank you.
Vielen Dank, Herr Schosach, und dann gebe ich das Wort.
Thank you, Mr. Schosach. I'm going to pass on the floor to Dr. Herrenknecht, who was directly addressed, and Mr. Brito and Mr. Sansoglu. If you want to have the floor again, please raise your hand electronically. But Mr. Herrenknecht first, please.
Unterstützung. Ich glaube.
Support. I believe in Europe we need to ensure that the technology that we have and the work by universities should be taken into account. The Chinese do a lot of copying, but some say, I'm not sure that's the case. We need to look at training of apprentices, and we need to look at research and push that with our universities, as we do in Germany and in Innsbruck as well now, to ensure that we have the technology at the top of the pyramid. That's very important. And dumping prices. Well, we've got our assembly facility in Guangzhou. We know down to the last detail what the prices are there. There's no problem in that respect. The 50 million threshold, well, others have talked sometimes about 25 or 30 million. I think we need to take into account what all those round the tables have said. And I'd like to thank the Minister and Mr. Hansen for taking up the topic. I think such projects as Lyon, Turin and the Brenner Tunnel should be looked at. We should ensure that European companies carry out such key projects which are of worldwide interest. European building contractors should be the suppliers there. They're world leading. These are prestige products, projects. There are some in America too. You can see railway tunnels such as Brenner or Lyon Turin, which are part of our attraction. It's difficult to prove dumping, it said, but because of this facility we have in Guangzhou, where we see European components are being used, the Chinese strategy is quite simple. They use dumping to access markets that they can then control. That's what I'd like to see looked at. I think in terms of projects, jobs are the issue for the supplying companies, for the contractors, especially with the 200 billion with the EU providing 80 billion in Italy for tunnel building. That should be for European construction companies and suppliers. I think we need to show some character and show some pride in what we have achieved in Europe. Thank you.
Vielen Dank, Herr Herrenknecht.
Thank you, Mr. Herrenknecht, and thank you also for your specific examples that you've mentioned. I think the Commission, at any rate, will be coming back to you and other stakeholders if they do assess this unfair competition and to take aim at it. You mentioned that you've got production inside and outside China, and you know exactly what the machinery costs and what the competitive edge is that third countries or companies in third countries can have. Unfortunately, slowly but surely, we are coming to the end already of our meeting today. I do see online Mr. Afonso Brito wants to take the floor. I'm going to give Mr. Brito the floor again, and then after that we'll slowly come to winding up the meeting. You've got the floor, Mr. Brito.
No, I will just want to make a very, very quick clarification. And it's just that we don't want to limit the foreign subsidies regulation only to state-owned enterprises. I just want to clarify that I've been mentioning a lot state-owned enterprises because we've noticed a lot of Chinese activity in the construction market, and many and the Chinese companies either are state-owned or have the state as their main stakeholder, and it's mainly companies from this country that have been engaging in unfair competition. So it's just to clarify that why I have put focus on state-owned enterprises, but of course the instrument should not treat state-owned enterprises and private companies differently. It should focus on whether a subsidy exists.
Yes, thank you very much for this clarification. Indeed, I think the border between a state-owned company and one that is massively benefiting from subsidies is quite thin. But thank you nonetheless that you are for this clarification there. And we don't have any more questions right at this stage. So I would already thank all the participants for being with us today and their contributions. It is as well, as I said, it. There are three committees that are in charge of this file. It's the INTA committee, the International Trade Committee, where I am the rapporteur, which is in the lead. Then, of course, there is the Internal Market Committee, where my colleague Christian Dolichal is the rapporteur, and where Andreas Schwab is the coordinator of the EPP, very active there as well. And in the Econ Committee, it is our shadow rapporteur, it is Inés Weidere, who unfortunately was not able, because to other meetings, to participate actively, but her office was listening in very thoroughly. So thank you very much for that. And for the closing remarks, I would give the floor to Christian Dolichal to wrap up our discussion today. Christian, you have the floor.
Ja, ganz herzlichen.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Christoph, for taking this initiative and organizing this hearing. I would like to thank all speakers for their high caliber statements. We've heard of pragmatic examples today as to the extent and ramifications of third country subsidies. We need uniform rules. I think that has been underscored by today's hearing. We cannot have member state subsidies subject to stricter EU state aid rules and checks than third country subsidies. These are difficult times, and precisely now is when we need fair competition, fair rules. We need to strike a balance. We need stricter rules. But what will the cost be? Ahead of today's hearing, I spoke to other companies that would have liked to take part in the hearing, but they have to compete against Chinese companies on the global market, and they did not dare to speak publicly about their difficulties. And that really illustrates the tragic situation and the scope of the problem we face. I'd like to thank the previous speaker and echo what Christoph Hansen said. We support the Commission proposal. We need to break, we need to close the regulatory gap. And I'd like to take this opportunity to briefly outline the key points in my internal market position paper on this file. One key point that Christoph Hansen mentioned is ensuring that the administrative burden for companies, bidders, and contracting authorities is not excessive. We also need to look at the subsidy control mechanism, ensure that any foreign subsidies are not allowed to distort the market. Another important point is the length of the contracting or tendering procedure. It takes too long as it is. So we've seen that there are higher prices for raw materials in the construction sector, higher energy prices, and that means that there are huge challenges facing bidders. So I would recommend that the Commission look at the deadlines for preliminary screening and shorten the time frame. Preliminary screening should be reduced from 60 to 30 days. And for an in-depth investigation, we need to reduce the period from 200 to 120 days. We also need to look at the estimated value for public contracts and consider a review clause. We know that we don't have much information on the true extent of third country subsidies. The Commission has made this clear, and so it must be possible after a period of practical implementation that we take a fresh look at the threshold values. I feel that it's very important that we ensure cooperation with national authorities, those responsible for contracting. We need to ensure exchange of information. Member states need to ensure that any competent authorities involved in tendering are involved in the preliminary screening and the in-depth investigation, that we ensure good cooperation. So that's a very brief overview of my opinion, and I'd like to leave it at that. I'd like to once again thank all speakers and all those that took part in today's hearing.
Christian, and I think you have made a good sum up of the discussion we had today, and as well the presentation of the IMCO opinion. It was very helpful to have this, and as well you mentioned the situation that some companies are afraid to speak out because they might face as well a pressure or even exclusion from certain markets. But nonetheless, I would like to highlight that at some point we had over 70 outside the European Parliament participants online today, where many companies dialed in. So they are, of course, very interested at this. I will as well mention that we have as well this instrument of the instrument on foreign subsidies, but we have as well other autonomous instruments, the IPI, that we are going about to conclude an agreement with the Council. And there is as well the anti-coercion instrument that is coming up that will exactly target the cases that you have mentioned there. Those will be, of course, other discussions there. I just want, after the conclusions by Christian, would like to thank again all participants for being with us today. It was very helpful to get your insights from the field and as well the reactions from the Commission there. And of course, I would like to thank the whole INTA, IMCO, and as well ECON team that participated and organized this whole meeting, because I think it was very timely. Thank you very much for all the work you have invested there. And to close, just a reminder, a recording of this hearing will as well be published soon. We keep in contact from this very important file, and I wish you all together a very good and nice afternoon. Thank you.